This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
Feeling the heat, it was the worst day of the year for stocks as turbulence builds in Washington and spreads to Wall Street.
New peak, why Americans are taking on more debt than ever, and is that creating a new risk for the economy?
Amazon ambitions, can the world's largest online retailer shake up the multi-billion dollar pharmacy business? Those stories and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for Wednesday, May 17th.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. We haven't had a day like this for a while. A thunderbolt hit the market today, jolting it awake from weeks of calm. Stocks slid, so did Treasury yields and the dollar. Volatility, meantime, spiked. Why? Well, for weeks, Wall Street mostly shrugged off any D.C. drama, instead focusing on corporate and economic fundamentals. Today, the shrugging stopped and the selling started. It came fast and furious after last night's reports that President Trump asked then FBI Director James Comey to back off the investigation into fired National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. The allegations contained in his as-yet-unseen Comey memo may mean absolutely nothing to the economy, not now, maybe not ever. But the concern on Wall Street is that the Trump GOP agenda of tax cuts, deregulation, and infrastructure spending could founder or fail amid a hailstorm of investigations. The Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped 372 points to 20,606, NASDAQ off 158, the S&P 500 fell 43. Though it was the worst day of the year for the indexes, we should point out that they all remain near record levels.
So what was the response in Washington that the markets were so focused on? Ayman Javers is covering the story for us tonight. Good to see you, Ayman, as always. What was the response from Capitol Hill and especially from Republican lawmakers?
Well, for the most part, Republicans held firm today in support of the president. We saw the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, come out and say that he wants Congress to investigate, to get to the bottom of it. But Paul Ryan also said that he simply doesn't worry about things that he can't control. The concern for this White House, though, is that Republicans are taking steps to continue their investigations, particularly the Senate Intelligence Committee under Senator Richard Burr, Republican. They're asking for James Comey to come up and testify, both publicly and privately, on Capitol Hill. And they're also asking the FBI today for copies of that Comey memo. They want to see it for themselves, Sue.
Did the president, Ayman, make any public statements today, answer any questions?
Well, the president was out of town. He went up to Connecticut to go to the Coast Guard Academy graduation, where he made a speech. But he did give us some insight into his state of mind, talking about his sense of grievance here and how unfair he's been treated. Here's what the president had to say earlier today.
Look at the way I've been treated lately, especially by the media. No politician in history, and I say this with great surety, has been treated worse or more unfairly. You can't let them get you down. You can't let the critics and the naysayers get in the way of your dreams.
So now, Sue, the FBI, the White House says they're pushing forward on the FBI director's search. They've interviewed four candidates the president has here at the White House this afternoon. Officials here also tell me they're pressing ahead on their legislative agenda. They want to keep their eyes on the legislative business that was the reason, they say, the president was elected in the first place.
On that note, Ayman Javers in Washington. Thank you, Ayman.
Well, today's sell-off was broad, with bank stocks particularly hard hit. Bob Bazzani watched it all from the floor of the New York Stock Exchange.
The markets have been rising because earnings guidance, the main driver of stock prices, have been strong. The global economy is improving, though there's been some weakness in China recently, and geopolitical risk in Europe is now lower. Investors believe in the Trump agenda of lower taxes, less regulation, infrastructure spending, and they believe that the markets can withstand a certain amount of political drama from Donald Trump as long as this agenda keeps advancing, even if it's slowly. What's happening now is different. Most of Trump's tweets in the past, well, maybe odd, were not actionable. This is actionable. Talk about obstruction of justice or an impeachment fight. That's another story altogether. It's a new level of uncertainty. So here we are faced with the prospects of a president that might be derailed by months of fighting. The risk is even if he survives, he loses so much political capital that the only thing he can get through is something that everybody can agree on, maybe infrastructure. But corporate tax reform might be in trouble. And this is why the markets are reacting today. So the potential for a 5 to 10% pullback has increased. Now, it's about time we had that. We haven't seen a modest pullback in a long time. The bottom line, traders finally have a downside story with a little meat to it. Where do we go from here? Anything that closes off a path to obstruction of justice or impeachment talk would be overall a market positive. But if this picks up steam and the prospects of a Watergate-style hearing, for example, emerge, well, it could be a very long summer. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Bob Pisani at the New York Stock Exchange.
So is it politics or fundamentals behind today's stock market sell-off? Sarah Hunt is portfolio manager at Alpine Funds, and she says Washington has finally gotten the market's attention. Stephen Woods joins us as well. He's chief market strategist at Russell Investments. He believes investors are getting back to market fundamentals. Thank you both very much for joining us tonight. Stephen, I'm going to start with you. You say you can't hide from fundamentals and that that's what the market is now pricing in.
I think so. There's been a lot of political instability for some time now. But if you look at the fundamentals in the U.S. economy, the global economy, and earnings, they're good. But valuations right now, or the price of the market, is very expensive. So we think it's going to take more than just good fundamentals to support these lofty valuations. And you shouldn't just look in the U.S. as well. This is why we preach multi-asset and global diversity, that it should be equities, fixed income, look globally. But valuations have been separating from fundamentals for a while. And I think fundamentals have come back more to the fore of the calculations.
Sarah, a lot of people have been waiting for a bit of a pullback in the market. I mean, there have been records earlier this week, and as we pointed out, we're not far from those records even today. Do you think this could be the beginning of that long-awaited pullback? And if so, how low might we go?
Well, I think the question is really going to depend on how fast and how quickly this moves. Does it move to real discussions of an actual impeachment, or is that just a lot of hyperbole that's going on, which we've heard before even this particular series of issues? If it looks like the issues are going to get resolved, then I think you might have a couple days of volatility, but then we have to see whether or not this is going to impact the timing of any agenda. And I think to the point about fundamentals, I agree on the sense that there is the fundamentals are striving to catch up, but a lot of what's being built in going forward has a lot to do with some of that agenda on tax reform and regulatory reform. So if it looks like that's slowing down, that's a negative piece of information for the fundamental picture as well.
Stephen, does this matter for the long-term investor, or is this actually an opportunity if you're paying attention to the fundamentals?
I think a long-term discipline really washes away a lot of short-term volatility. So if you look at political headlines, they have not been really sticky, historically speaking. So if an expensive market with unchanged fundamentals were to provide a discount, that would be something of an opportunity. But I think a person should move from their home country bias, take a more global, more multi-asset. That way you don't have to make a lot of these tough decisions, and that can also help wash away some of the short-term volatility. Longer term, that discipline will help.
Sarah, we here don't believe much in market timing. I assume you don't either. But if you are an investor whose time horizon may be shorter rather than longer, and you are a little bit concerned about the possibility of a prolonged slide in prices, what should you do?
Well, I think, I mean, generally speaking, you always advise people to have some cash on hand if they have short-term needs. So obviously that's something that you want to think about. And I think that you've had a big run in the market, and to the point where we were down today, but it's the first time you've had a down day more than 1% for I don't know how long, and we're just off of highs. So the question is, do you want to maybe think about taking some of that off the table just to see where this goes for a little while, and then looking at where else you might want to put it, again, to the point of being internationally asset classes as well. And so I think that there are reasons to take a look at your holdings, but you should be doing that on a fairly regular basis anyway.
Right. Stephen, if you had to pick one of those fundamentals that you talked about, which would be the most important to you as you make decisions where to allocate cash? What are you watching the most closely?
The fundamentals right now, the economy looks okay in the U.S. We don't see a recession. But I'm going to be looking at what the Federal Reserve does and what that means for inflation and what that means for a portfolio. So if I had to watch one data stream, it would be what Dr. Yellen and the Federal Reserve are doing, because that's critical information.
Sarah, let me follow up. That's an interesting line of thinking there. A lot of people have been thinking that there are at least two more interest rate hikes baked into the cake for the remainder of this year. Do you see it that way? And what if the market goes through a much more volatile phase and slides off? Does it call into question two instead of one?
I would say that there's definitely, if the market moves further. I think that you're going to start seeing whether the question of interest rate moves be asked again, because certainly when we saw Brexit and some of the volatility that was around there, you saw the Fed pause. I don't think they necessarily want to in June. The odds of a June hike have come down, but they're still above 80%. So I don't think that unless anything major happens between now and then, or the market gets much weaker, that June is going to be off the table. But the question about what they do for the balance of the year is going to be an issue. And you're also looking, I mean, you've seen what's happened to interest rates already. So interest rates have come back down quite dramatically, which is positive for dividend stocks and positive for a lot of the companies that for which that's important.
All right. Thank you both so much. Sarah Hunt with Alpine Funds, Stephen Wood with Russell Investments.
Well, households are taking on more debt, a lot more. In fact, they now owe a record amount of it. But if all that borrowing conjures up images of 2008, there are differences this time around, as Steve Leisman explains.
The New York Federal Reserve reports that household debt across the nation has hit a dubious milestone. It finally surpassed the peak of 2008 and now stands at $12.7 trillion. So is there reason to worry that another financial crisis could be brewing? It's impossible to say, but debt is substantially different now from the debt run-up that led to the financial crisis.
The debt service cost right now is at a lower level, mostly because interest rates are lower. If you go back to pre-crisis levels, interest rates were at a higher rate. So the cost of carrying debt for households was higher than it is now.
Since 2008, the population has also grown. So while total debt is higher, debt per capita is now just $48,000. That compares to $53,000 at the peak. And default rates are quite a bit lower, as many have taken on only the debt they can repay.
The confidence of repaying the debt is high at this point. I'm being very cautious since the 2008 debacle.
But that's not true for all types of debt. Auto and student loan debts have been increasing, and student loan default rates are in the double digits.
My debt level is pretty high because I recently finished college, and I have over $14,000 to pay off.
Me and my husband just recently purchased a home, so my debt level has increased recently because of that.
More household debt can be a sign of confidence in the economy, but it can hold back growth if it gets too high.
Going forward, it can be seen as a headwind, a sign of strain in the economy that can hold consumers back. We would need to see more or continued job strength, more wage growth going forward if we wanted to be able to maintain these levels.
Compared with 2008, more mortgages are going to those with the highest credit scores. That means fewer defaults, but it also means big parts of the population just can't get credit to buy homes, and that's bad for growth and bad for the economy long term. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Steve Leisman.
Still ahead, Cisco skids. Why the world's largest networking gear maker could put more pressure on stocks when the opening bell rings tomorrow. Dow component Cisco is warning that revenue for the current quarter will come in below analyst estimates. The company also said it will cut additional jobs. In its late-day earnings report, Cisco earned 60 cents a share, 2 cents better than estimates. Revenue fell for the sixth straight quarter to nearly $12 billion. Investors punished the stock in initial after-hours trading, and Seema Modi has more now on Cisco's quarter.
Cisco, the networking giant, issuing weak guidance for the fourth quarter. Revenue has now fallen for a sixth quarter in a row, although earnings did beat street expectations. Cisco also extending its restructuring plans, which will impact an additional 1,100 jobs. The cuts come on top of the 5,500 job cuts announced last August, as Cisco tries to stay competitive in the fast-moving world of technology and invest in new areas. Our Nightly Business Report, Seema Modi.
Amazon shook up the retail industry and has forever changed the way Americans shop. And now, according to a CNBC report, the e-commerce giant could potentially shake things up in the multi-billion dollar pharmacy industry. Shares of potential drugstore rivals, CVS Health and Walgreens, down 3% today on that report. Christina Farr, health and technology reporter for CNBC.com, broke the story and joins us now from San Francisco. Christina, welcome. Congratulations on the scoop. What have you heard about Amazon's intentions, and why are they considering this now?
Well, Amazon has been thinking for a long time about breaking into the pharmacy market, but now it seems to be getting serious. Our sources are telling us that Amazon is hiring a GM to lead a business unit, and they will strategize how exactly Amazon can break into this market.
You know, Amazon has been selling drugs or trying to sell prescription drugs in Japan. Would that be like a test market for them before they come to the United States?
Absolutely. We were able to dig up this page in Japan that showed that they were starting to sell drugs there along with things like cosmetics. So if it takes off in Japan, it's possible that they could bring that to the U.S. next. And this is something we see Amazon do time and time again. They try out an experimental new product somewhere else and then bring it here.
How concerned are they about competition? Amazon obviously is no stranger to competition. They compete every day and very successfully. But there are some big players here like CVS Health, like Walgreens, and insurance plans that are tied in to those incumbents.
Absolutely. And certainly they are seeing a lot of threat from the established players. We saw some stock moves today on the back of the news from some of the biggest pharmacies. So there are companies that would try to block Amazon if they were to enter this space. But Amazon has huge resources at its disposal. And I can imagine that they could go in guns blazing and shake up this market almost from the get-go.
Yeah. What does that mean then for consumers? Because usually Amazon means lower prices. Does that translate to the prescription drug market?
Great question, Sue. And it's very possible that Amazon could someday bring down prices on drugs, especially if they had data at their disposal mm-hmm. and were able to prove that if we could get easier access to our drugs on Amazon, that people were filling them more frequently and then additionally taking their drugs if they could show a boost in compliance. So I think there are a lot of possibilities there, and a lot of folks would love to see Amazon shedding some transparency and some light on this whole murky world of drug prices.
Fascinating story. Christina Farr, thank you very much from San Francisco tonight.
Sales fall less than expected at Target. That's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. The retailer, which is in the midst of a turnaround, beat revenue and same-store sales expectations, but had a drop in customer traffic and spending. Earnings also topped estimates, and the company reaffirmed its guidance that same-store sales will fall in the low single digits this year. Shares rose almost 1% to $55.04. Sales at American Eagle Outfitters beat analysts' expectations, but profit didn't fare quite as well. The teen retailer said slower mall traffic and an increase in promotional activity caused earnings to drop and miss estimates. The company also sees adjusted profit for the current quarter coming in below street targets. Shares plunged 14% to $11.05. Colgate-Palmolive may be considering a sale. The New York Post says the consumer products company's CEO is open to selling the business for $100 a share. That would value that company at $88 billion. Shares were up nearly 6% to $75.69.
Johnson & Johnson bets some of its pipeline products will turn into blockbusters. The company said it has more than 10 treatments for various diseases it plans to launch or file for approval within the next few years. The company's CEO spoke to Meg Terrell about it.
If you look at over the last 5 years, I think we've been able to introduce about 12 new compounds, 11 of which are blockbusters, $1 billion plus. And but what we're really going to be talking about today is how excited we are for the future. I mean, we've got 10, as you just mentioned, between now and 2021. We think we've got about 50 line extensions, 11 of which have about $500 million potential.
On this down market day, shares fell only fractionally to 126.67. The Justice Department is suing United Health Group, alleging the health insurer received at least $1 billion from false Medicare claims. This is the second lawsuit this month the U.S. government has brought against the company because of Medicare payments. Still, shares up today, 74 cents at 168.86. And Southwest Airlines will launch a $2 billion share buyback plan and also raise its quarterly dividend 25% to more than 12 cents a share. The yield is now just under 1%. Southwest shares were off 2% at $57.04. And Ascena Retail warned that it would miss its third quarter sales and earnings targets as a result of what else? Slower customer traffic and a lot of promotions. That'll do it to you. Owner of Ann Taylor and Dress Barn also lowered full-year earnings outlooks, saying it expects operating conditions in the specialty retail sector to remain challenging. Shares of the small-cap company finished the regular session down 1% at $2.82, but then following the news, got crushed in after-hours trading, initially losing a third of value.
The recent global ransomware attack that spread to more than 100 countries has shed light on one of the most pressing challenges facing the cybersecurity industry. It's a labor shortage. Some experts say that shortfall has reached crisis levels. Aditi Roy reports tonight from San Francisco.
Cloud Passage, a cybersecurity startup in San Francisco, has 122 employees. When executives are looking to hire, they have a tough time finding qualified cyber warriors.
We're based in San Francisco, but we find we can't just hire in San Francisco anymore. Those people are so scarce that we scour the country for them, and when we find them, we hire them wherever they are. So we have people who work in Denver or in Florida.
They're not the only ones. Experts say the labor shortage in cybersecurity is dire. A Cisco report estimates there are 1 million unfilled cybersecurity positions globally. Here in the U.S., that number is about 100,000.
It's almost at a crisis point.
A crisis that some say directly hurts the ability of companies and governments to curb hacking. Just this week, executives in more than 100 countries were reeling from a global cyber attack. And Disney CEO Bob Iger reportedly told employees that online criminals are demanding a ransom for a movie they claim to have stolen through hacking. One report shows cyber crimes cost U.S. companies an average of more than $16 million per year. The hardest hit sectors, financial services, utilities and energy, and technology. But academics like UC Berkeley's Jesse Goldhammer says no one is safe.
If you're making pet food, you need cybersecurity.
Industry watchers say the root of the problem is that traditional college computer science programs don't provide the necessary skills to battle today's cyber thieves.
They don't get any training at school, and we have a mentality of perimeter defense. So the mentality in security is if I lock the front door, no one can get to my assets behind it. But the trouble today is that people don't break down the front door anymore. They dig tunnels or they steal the front door key.
Hackers also have a financial advantage. Experts say often all it takes to break into a major company's computer system is a laptop and some hacking tools you can buy online for a couple of $100s. But companies can spend up to millions of dollars to protect themselves.
Even an amateur hacker can find sophisticated tools that can bypass protections that companies have.
And experts are working on a number of solutions. A recent UC Berkeley white paper suggests the government start an incubator to build up the cyber workforce. MIT and IBM are partnering to find ways the company's Watson technology can solve cyber crimes through automated tech. And the U.S. government sponsors hackathon tournaments for college, even high school students, to build up the nation's pipeline of cyber warriors. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Aditi Roy, San Francisco.
Coming up, going once, going twice, why the fine art industry will be put to the test this week. It is the biggest week of the year for the fine art market. More than $1 billion worth of art pieces expected to be sold. And the question is, will sellers get the prices they want? Robert Frank reports from New York.
The markets may look ugly, but the big auction houses are hoping that wealthy collectors haven't lost their attraction to fine art.
This is the biggest sales week of the year for the auction houses in New York, with more than $1 billion worth of art headed to the auction block. Christie's kicked off the action Monday night with its Impressionist sale, selling this Brancusi sculpture called Sleeping Muse for more than $57 million, or nearly twice its estimate, and a record for the Romanian artist. Picasso's Femme Assise went for $45 million, also well above its estimate. But the biggest lots come up tonight and tomorrow night with the post-war and contemporary sales, which collectors now prefer. It will mark a big test of whether the stock market declines and Washington headlines will derail an art recovery that began after the election.
Our market has proven to be very resilient. We already experienced this kind of situation, and the market resisted.
The most expensive painting of the week is likely to be this untitled piece from Jean-Michel Basquiat being sold by Sotheby's that could fetch over $60 million. The other big star is this triptych by Francis Bacon, which is expected to top $50 million at Christie's. And this famous Cy Twombly called Lita and the Swan could top $55 million.
Now, those prices are a far cry from the 100 million plus sales we saw in 2014 and 2015. But the next 2 days will determine whether the art market is at all colored by the Trump turmoil in Washington. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Robert Frank.
And before we go, the drama in D.C. spread to Wall Street. The Dow dropped 372 points, the Nasdaq off 158, the S&P 500 fell 43. Adding to the intrigue out of D.C., former FBI Director Robert Mueller will be appointed special counsel in the Russia investigation. We'll see if that impacts the markets tomorrow. And that is Nightly Business Report tonight. I'm Sue Herrera. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for me as well. I'm Tyler Matheson. Have a great evening, everybody, and we will see you right back here tomorrow night.